and on the way, to make a little fire, to make some warm water, to wash Baba's feet. They would be blistered, so full of dust. So, first thing, what we wanted to do as soon as we'd done that was to go and relieve ourselves, you know. But there were no toilets, there were no bathrooms, nothing. So two by two we would go, and then we'd come back, and then another would go with the other, way in the distance, where you would find that this was, you know, really thick shrubbery, and you would be private and all. But then when we came back, after washing Baba's feet, we wanted just to relax, you know. We've had a long, hard day. But no, they couldn't. So once, when we were seated before, we were seated with Baba under the trees, and we had before us these villagers. And of course, we just saw the women. Well, my point of view would be the women's. So there was one old lady. Ah, such a colorful character. You know, such joie de vivre, as they say in French. Such just bubbling over. And she was very old. But she had this long pajama, and she had a lot of earrings in her ear, a lot of bangles. You know, she still had all that. And she sat before Baba, and it was extraordinary to see what Baba meant to them, even though they were before him thinking that this is a strange, this is a party of strangers. It never used to be like that. I mean, they looked to Baba, from what we could observe, as he was, at least he was father or head man of the village, or big, you know. It wasn't just on a par. So they would sit, and sometimes they'd ask questions. And this old lady said, she said, you know, I would like to get up and dance. I used to dance. People would just look. I would dance for you. But what am I to do? I have these aches and these pains and these things. And all the time looking at Baba, you know, knowing that he can alone do. And she wanted to dance for him. And Baba nodded and smiled. Then he told Gohar to go over to the men's side. Their camping is always separate. We could see them at a distance, that's all. And tell Baidu to give some homeopath for them. So Baba tells her, don't you worry. It'll be cleared up. It'll be fine. See, now she's going to get you some medicine. So, and the medicine comes. It's put in her hand. And she looks. She said, these teeny weeny things are going to make me well, but my pain is big. You know, I got big things, and this is going to be, you just have it. So anyway, she took it. Didn't look as if she really believed it would help. But then once they sat around, and there was more talking, and, you know, all this was going on. And we'd all forgotten about the pills, and I'm sure she had too. But before we knew, she was standing up, and she danced for the Lord, and she turned. And it's one of the things of new life that are very endearingly remembered by me. Just to see that. And she really, you could see her heart was in. And she did a good job, too. And Baba said, good. Only after they had all gone did we realize that, hey, Baba gave her the pills. And then before you knew it, she was dancing. We didn't put two and two together. Not even she, none of us. But we witnessed this. Those little pills, just like this little mic. So it makes me feel very relaxed and say, oh, this won't matter. But it's recording everything.
You think it was Baba's grace, or was it really the pills, or was it Baba who said?
How do I know? He never explained. That's one of the reasons he kept silent. I told him one day, you all will be happy to know. As a sister, I used to talk to him as a sister sometimes. And I said, now I know why you never come as woman. Avatar is always in the form of a man. Now I know why. He looks at me, sort of, now what are you up to? And I said, well, if you were a woman, you'd have given away all the secrets, all that we wanted to know. You would have told us. But you see, now we can't give anything out. I would have told everything.
Did he laugh at that?
Huh? Did he laugh at that? Yeah, he had a twinkle in his eye. He laughed, sort of.
Sonny, when was it that he distributed sweets? Was it Christmas time? Happy New Year?
Oh, Christmas? No, wait a minute. No, it was on New Year, 1950.
Yeah.
Yeah? And early in the morning, I don't know where this sweets or cakes or whatever it was Baba was distributing came from.
Had it in Muradabad?
Muradabad. It was in Muradabad. We were staying for some days.
It was Hajir Lal's son who brought it.
Achcha. Yeah.
He was so surprised having come there.
Yeah.
Because his father said.
So Baba came over from the men's side to where the women were. This is during the new life when we were at Muradabad. We halted for quite a few days there. And Baba came over with this cake, bits of sweet or cake, as far as I remember. It was cake, but it could have been just sweets. And he gave it to each of us. This was on New Year's Day, 1st January 1950. And he told me that, repeat, to say it for him, Happy New Life. So as soon as he gave a piece of that sweet to Mara, I was saying, Happy New Life on behalf of Baba. Baba was wishing each of us Happy New Life as he gave us that sweet for them. Mm. Not Happy New Year, but Happy New Life. Mm. Is Muradabad, that was, it was an enormous room. The place where we stopped at Muradabad, that's why we stayed for a few days, it was a sort of a charitable room, Eraj, public room? I mean,
no, it was like your, it was not a room, actually speaking, because it was a pavilion, like a Ramila ground.
Brown, but it was a room. The only the funny part is
yeah,
it had 12 doors.
Like room, it was all pillars and
yeah, that's it. There were 12 doors to that room.
It was a pavilion.
And that's
for enacting the epic of Ram.
Ah,
Rama.
So all these stage
so
things. There were 12 doors to that oblong, what looked like a room, because I mean there were walls, and we had of course closed all the doors. But 12 doors, and I wasn't well. And I just wanted to crawl into my bed and just go to sleep. So they had washed that balcony or room, that pavilion had been washed, but it hadn't dried. And it was very, very cold. Mm. So when you get there, when you're not well, and you see this wet floor and nowhere to sit. So what Mara and Gohar and Meru did was quickly undo my little bedding, which meant a blanket and something, a sheet. And they laid it out for me. And I was so happy just to lie down. But then the drafts that came from under those 12 doors, one was right by my head. And, you know, our doors are always equipped for summer somehow. Maybe the carpenters do that purposely, I don't know. But they never really close properly. So from underneath the doors, there's always a draft coming through. Now, if you're on a bed, you never notice. But I was on the floor, practically. And I said, now how? Who's going to come? So I can say, please do something about this door. then they had to stop it, things like that. But it was very interesting. There was a little path that went by, and people would go by in the mornings. It's strange how only women would stop and talk with us. The men never stopped. We never went out on the veranda, but if they did, they just went by. Except the sadhu came once, and he was demanding, you know, he wanted rice, he wanted... And he said, come, I said, shh, shh, please, 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 go away from here. What do you mean, go away? He said, atta, flower, you know, shh, shh, shh. When we told that to Baba, he laughed at me. But some of the people that went by were very interesting, and among them were these two hermaphrodites. Is that how you call it? Two hermaphrodites. Is that how you call it? Mm-hmm. Not union, yeah. So, but they were so friendly. They were so nice. They'd always stop and say, how are we? Are we comfortable?
With a deep voice. They had a sari on. Talk with a deep voice, you know.
And he said, yes, we were quite comfortable. And we talk
with a deep voice, you know.
And he said, yes, we were quite comfortable. And we talk about the weather or this or that. When are you leaving? We had to go out and take water from a little well at the back. There were no taps, no bathrooms, nothing like that. So there was a little well, very interesting little wells. They almost look like those wishing wells that we read about. So we would just go and put a little pail like that and bring out the water.
Where is Moradabad?
It's not India. Near college. From there you could see the ranges of mountains, Himalayan foothills and other things.
And beautiful brass work, no, Eris? Baba took us on a cycle rickshaw through that town. Beautiful brass work.
It is famous for it.
And then when we were in Jaunpur, one of the most extraordinary things that we saw there, and it's famous for, are the radishes. Jaunpur ka Mura, we call it Mura, means radish. Would you believe the size of it? We have seen people go marketing and buy one radish and hold it like this over the shoulder, and the leaves trail on the ground, and here is this big radish that they carry. And, well, one is enough, I think, for a week for a family, but very tender. But just because they're big, they were not hardened. Very tender. And you really could... So when we were first given some of that mura, we said, how on earth can we eat this big piece? We looked at each other when Kaka had prepared. No, it's just so tender, you eat it up. So then Mera had told so many people about this radish that in the end, Baba had somebody write to a lover of his in Jaunpur and call for it. So they sent it in a basket, but they had to cut it in two. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'd have to send it in a cupboard.
A bullet cart.
All the way from, it had to come by train. You see, they had to cut it into thick like this and big. And then the leaves. Tender, that thing. But you see, you always think that what you see growing in the north or in any other place, you can make the same thing grow in Ahmednagar. But it's not so. Wherever we would go, like in Mount Abu, we used to get salad, lettuce, mm-hmm. so big that you could just manage to put your arm around it. You couldn't put your arm around it. Oh. So one leaf was enough. You know. So Mara thought, oh, how lovely that would be to have it in Ahmedabad, you know, here in Mehrazad, or what beautiful flowers we would see. And she was always asking us to ask the gardeners, you know, and get those seeds. And of course, we come and plant here, and it's not the same. Hmm. No, just the common garden things would come up there. And you see, where they belong, they grow. Like, I remember the story Elizabeth told us, that once when she was in Japan, you know how Elizabeth would love any animal, bird, life. You know, she had an extraordinary compassion and for it. So... she never tired. No matter how many pets she had, if Baba gave her another pet, she looked after it just as much as she looked after the first pet. So she said, she told us this story. So she saw these beautiful birds in a cage. And she asked what was the name of the birds. She'd never seen such colorful, beautiful birds before. And she was told they were called birds of paradise. Oh, that was all the, you know, nicer. So she got the birds. And then, of course, she was traveling. She happened to be in Japan at the time, so she took the birds with her. At the next place, first thing she remembered in the morning was to feed the birds and put the bird bath that's attached to it, you know, attached to a cage, and then the birds can go up. And they all had a bath. And when she came back, she found they were just common house sparrows. All the colors have been washed away. Oh. They had just been... in a, that's why she... That's why she said, you know, I should have known because I'd never seen, couldn't believe there could be so many colors and such colors on birds. So she didn't recognize them. So birds of paradise. Right? So Elizabeth said, well, I took them out of the cage and I said, now you can fly off to paradise.
What is the, do you remember the story of the cat that was thrown out at night?
The cat that
was?
The cat, Margaret, the cat that was, that father kept telling Margaret.
You see, Margaret has written in her book, I think, about it, isn't it? But I can just give you the essence of it. But, you know, if you're quoting that story, please quote Margaret herself. She's the source. But we were here, and we remember this beautiful cat. First time we saw a Siamese cat, and her name was Geisha. And somehow she came from Ahmednagar. I think Saroj had it from some of the military personnel, or but later then it went to Dr. Gohar's parents, and then they sent it over. And Baba gave it to Margaret to care for. And Mehrazad at that time, it was not named Mehrazad, and it was a much smaller place. The extensions were done, Baba had them done in 1948, and then the name Meher Azad means free. And then at one time, Baba explained that all those who are living here with me, as my mandali here, will all be freed within 100 years or something like that. Anyway, so see, that's what I do. I go sidetracked. And,
the cat.
Yeah. So then there was a small room. Margaret had a sort of a small room, and there was the cat. And Baba gave the cat to her to look after, so she looked after it very, very long way. But Margaret was one of those people who never questioned anything Baba told her to do. You know, not even from the practical point of view. Even if it seemed the most outlandish or peculiar or strange thing Baba would tell her to do, well, Margaret appeared to be a peculiar herself, and she'd just do it. And Baba would sometimes tease her, would ask her to do something. Like, said, pick up that stone. Oh. Baba said, look how blank she gets. I'm telling her to pick up that stone. Oh, Baba, she laughed. She picked up the stone. Put it down. And she put it down. You know, things like. So it was rather surprising when one day Margaret wasn't happy to put the cat out because it was a stormy night and the rain was pouring down. And Margaret said, oh, but Baba, it's raining. So it's so stormy outside now. So Baba said, all right, give the cat in. Next day again, Baba said, put her out. It's done it the first day. And he said, what's the matter? Why isn't the cat put out? Why isn't Geshe put out? Out. And again the second day, she said, oh, but Baba, it's such a stormy night. Because again there was a storm next night. And then Baba looked at fire in his eyes and said, whose cat is she? Yours or mine? And she said, yours, Baba. Put it out. And she did. And later it was found that it corresponded so perfectly with that...
D-Day invasion.
That so perfectly with that. And was it Eisenhower? Or was the first time when they said put it out, and they said no, it was such a storm at the sea. And and then next day when again that happened, he said, who's in command? You or I? Mm-hmm. And they said, you are. I said, put the fleet out. And they went out into the storm and won. But it was so perfectly coincidental, or corroborated, rather, not. And so that was a very interesting story. Margaret figured that one out. But, you know, sometimes Baba would jokingly, very lightly, very casually say things which we thought was fun. We join into the spirit of the fun because we were not thinking anything spiritually. We were just thinking everything in terms of Baba's company. That was all. And that was everything. There was nothing beyond that we wanted or ever thought of or even now wish for. Just that. So Baba would tease one or the other, or Narina or somebody said, well, he said, now we were going to Jaipur, for instance, and Baba suddenly changed the plan, even train reservations and everything, and make a detour and go elsewhere. Yes. So the men, of course, had to see to all that. We don't know. You see, we didn't see them. We didn't know what they did. But all the dirty work had to be done at that end, and with the changing reservations, doing the tickets and all that sort of thing. So again, that plan would be changed. And Baba suddenly says, see, now we go this way, and now France will go that way. And now we're pulling out from here, and they will pull out from there. And we thought it was such fun, you know, Baba saying that. Because now we realize that he was saying it. He was making it appear humorous, but that it happened. It happened. That's exactly what happened. But we just go along and... And that time, as I said before, that time is the time when Baba would not let himself be known. He would... Baba would not let himself be known. He would, when he was traveling among the people, when he was among the crowds, when he was going from all over India and all, he was going incognito. He would even dress up with the, he would not be, he should not be visibly recognized. And as Erich and all have told you about the many stories when he would do that. But for us women who were traveling in the blue bus with him, even wherever we landed, we were not to address him even as Baba. Because in case that might give somebody an idea that it could be Meher Baba. So we were not to say Baba. We had to say nothing. We said nothing. But Narina would say, Babuli. She would call, when she had to talk to him, darling, Babuli. And Nadine Tolstoy would call him Babushka. And we called him nothing. We're not when the others or the servants were out or when we were eating or anything like that. So it was so strange that Baba actually kept his name in seclusion while he outwardly did the work. He kept his name in seclusion. It's like all the water that collects behind a dam. The dam was pulled in, and that's so the time when the time came and he released his name, he released that gift when the dam was broken, then it the force with which it's gone out. And even now we don't hear it now. Like that time when we were with Baba and Baba had us watch from afar a team of boys playing football. And every time volleyball or football, I think it's football. Anyway, every time the ball would come down on the ground, we could see it. And when the football rose into the air, we heard it. So what we hear is what has already happened. It has already happened. All this which we see now has already happened. And it had happened when Baba told us about it. But the reaction of that action, the hearing, the sound, was here now. So then when Baba said, himself released it, it is his gift, his name, he would say, give out my name. Tell about me. Tell everybody about my, spread my message. It had the effect because it is from him. It is not that we went out on our own to do it, because Baba said it. I still remember Bill LePage, who was here when Baba called him here specially at that time and then told him to go back there and tell about me. So, he was a messenger. He carried that with him to do it. And then when his letters would come, they would be read out to Baba. Eris would read out aloud. And we would be amazed. Bill would say, Before I can knock, the doors open before I can knock. And anywhere or anyone he spoke to, they just received it. Because he was giving it. But before that, I don't think we could have traveled with Baba in those days had everybody known about Baba. Had he given his name then. We used to go out for walks with Baba in Dehradun and Hyderabad and wherever they were. We couldn't do that afterwards. Already it was getting to be like that. I remember when we were in Dehradun, when Baba would go out in the mornings to go to the mandali, there would be a line of women and men standing there who were allowed to stand there on condition they would not utter a sound, they would not do anything, they would just stand there and just see Baba go by. And that's all they wanted to do, just glimpse, just see Baba go by. So already it was not getting so free like we had before. When we could go anywhere with Baba for walks and not worry about anybody knowing him or coming. And yet we have seen that Baba lovers, the ones who were Baba lovers, would not intrude, would not disturb when Baba said, don't come, wherever he is. Supposing he is in Satara. He had told all his followers, nobody should come. Nobody should disturb me. Nobody should have my darshan. I'm in seclusion. Keep away. And they kept away. And yet we would see Baba going for a walk in the morning with Peter the Cocker Spaniel following and Gaurav there with the umbrella, or one of the men would come over to... We would see them, or when we were going for a walk with Baba in the evening, just us women and Baba, suddenly a woman was sweeping the streets. was sweeping the street, dropped her broom and came straight up to Baba. And Baba stood still, allowed her to bow down. He even lifted his sadra a little bit so she could bow down, place her head. And Baba spoke, and I said to myself, my God, I mean, what wouldn't his lovers do for this? And yet, you know, they said, keep, you know, they're kept away. This training at the least, but they're told to keep. And yet, here's this it seemed like a chance. This humble, ragged sweeper woman, she just threw a broom and came and had darshan, and Baba gave it. And that giving was so visible, it awed me as we went by. So maybe this is thing, this God chance, God luck, I don't know. With Baba also, we just didn't have extraordinary questions. We had no questions. But the question that would come in our mind would be this kind. There would be Baba seated on the bed in his room, washing his hands after the meal. Or we would be reading out. Or Baba resting. And his sadra would fall away from one of the shoulders. And Baba's shoulder was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Baba's complexion was very lovely. And a fly would come and rest on it. And my big question was, why? Why this fly? There are billions of flies in the world. Why this fly? I mean, what connection could a fly have to have earned this? Because what we receive of his closeness is what we have earned. It doesn't come right. So how? In a question I didn't ask Baba. But I said, why does he pick up this stone? Why this vegetable? Why? But his blessings are so vast, so infinite. Are so vast, so infinite, that when he comes as man, it is not only the few who are around him or anything that has had contact with him that they are blessed. To some measure, the whole world is blessed. Like the ripple, you know, when a pebble is dropped into a lake. But at first it's there, but then there are ripples after ripples after. Entire world is blessed. That blessing is unfathomable, unmeasurable. But what was the point?
Why that?
You see, that's why I ask for
the
memory
plot.
Also.
Not asking Baba questions.
Yeah. And another other time when Baba would be lying down on the bed, and his eyes were closed. He was resting. And we were told to massage, press. So we would, this is the way, so if his legs are out there, hands, same, one would do it here, then hand. So we very gently, so we have our little stools right around the bed, we gathered, and we're doing this. And eyes still closed, and he'd say, now it is, I can't do. Stop, so we stop. Now, having stopped, we're very close to the bed. You can't get up and go to your chair because that would make a sound. That would be disturbing. You dare not breathe. You just sit there, you know, and you just sit like that while Baba's resting. And I remember that at least twice this has happened to me. And that absolute sad is as if he was taken unaware of it. But here Baba's lying down, reposing on the bed, and I suddenly have this waves coming to me from him, like when you're at the beach, and even if you're blind, you can't see. You feel the breath of the sea coming to you, and you know the tang of the salt, the freshness of the seawater, and you know you're by the ocean. So these waves of purity, I cannot describe it, but it was absolute purity, wave after wave, and. Although what I couldn't see, but I could feel. That happened twice today. Well, we didn't discuss it afterwards. I didn't say, what did you feel? There was nothing like that because, as I said, there was no room for anything except Baba. Our whole, not only was our life focused on Baba, not only our days and our weeks, but every moment. Even when he was not physically with us, even when he was with the men or when he was on a mass tour, everything was just totally him. Because there was nothing that we did or thought or received that was not linked totally with him. And so you see, that is a pattern that can be followed now. And this is the same way that we cannot see him, but we do. Sometimes I think to myself that we used to read the Tolkien books to him, the Lord of the Rings. And in it, when Bilbo, later Frodo, put on the ring, they're invisible and can be seen. But the shadow can be seen. If Frodo's standing in the sun, you can see a shadow. So one of the things I used to also tell, I said, see, Mara, Baba's still here. You feel his presence. Well, the only thing is we can't see him. It's just like when Frodo put on the ring. Baba's put on the ring. And that is why we cannot see him, but he's very much here. And then I tell myself, yes, the shadow is very much here. By the shadow, we can tell the light. There's no shadow without light. So because the shadow is there, you know the light is there. You know he is there because of the shadow. I thought that was pretty clever.
Did you feel that from the beginning after he dropped his body?
I don't know. Yes, right from the beginning. But it didn't ease the agony or the ache. Not in the beginning. Not for a long time. And then, extraordinary enough, as time went by, we missed many of the little intimate things of our life with Baba. You know, intimate presence, that he would be seated here. Oh, he liked reading this book. Oh, this grammar, this record that we used to play, and like that. But right from the start, because as I tell you, then right from then we could recognize that Baba is so much here with us that Mara could tell those people who came up from all over India, and say those who came up from Andhra who don't know our language, and we don't know their language. So there's no communicating language between us. And so they were just saying, Baba, Baba, Baba. And weeping, and Mara embracing them and comforting them. Baba is here. She would place her hand on their heart. Baba is here. And she would point at us. Baba. Baba is here. And she would point at us. Baba. Baba. Baba is here. And I watched and I was amazed. And I said, Baba. He really is doing his own work. He really is doing what he has to do. So right from the start in that way, but it, as I say, somebody asked me the other day, would you like to go back to the time you were with Baba? You know, in the old days, go back to those olden golden days. I said, not if we had to cross what we crossed, not that threshold that we had to cross in 69. I also tell this young man that keep longing for that. Keep longing for that. There's no equivalent to that. No matter what the fruits, doesn't matter. Don't think of those things. Just to be with him. Just to be with him when he comes again. As God-man. And even, as I said, even though we must have longed, it only is the fruit of longing. We must have longed how many lives, I don't know. But even when we had it, even when I had it right from the time I was born, it's not enough. So any time if I want to want anything again, that's still the only want. Yeah. And so you see, you've already made a date, already booked. Yeah. Because he is the only fulfiller of every longing. So it depends on what you long for. Depends on what you want. He'll give it. And sometimes, by the time you receive what you want, you may not be wanting that. So why not only want that which you really... You see, some, as I said, we know everything, even I who talk and tell these things. I'm not perfectly able to observe these things. It is His grace alone. But reminders are good. So if even if I say these things, it's not for teaching, but reminding. It's good to remind ourselves. Baba alone is real. After all, whatever happens, how bad can it be? He's with us. How many lives have we had? What a habit we've had of worrying. What a habit we've had of going through the illusion. How many families have we had? How many parents we've had? How many lives we've had? All these things, by habit, we've been doing it again and again and again and again. And it changes, keeps changing. He is the only one who does not change, who's unchangeable. So even while he tells us, do your duty, we have to do all that. We have to go through what, but not to be upset when the plan is different from what we would like it to be. And then Baba said, errors for the new life, not to be, if affected, but with some other word, by either by praise or slander.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was very beautifully put, I forget.
The song is...
Yeah. Oh, and the new life song was so, so tremendous. It's like, again, being by the ocean. You cannot see the depth, but I have always been able to feel it right from the start. And I've been always awed by it. I've never sung the new life song. I couldn't. It scares me. That. So not to laugh about the Japanese body was I. But even then, it's so tremendous. You really can even feel the dimension of those words in the new life song, just in the words. That is why it is our duty as lovers, because we are so fortunate to have had these examples of lovers, past lovers. Great lovers. The beloved is one. But for us, we have a guideline. How did they love? Look at the way they did. So to read about lovers of the past, the great lovers who really loved. And knowing how weak we are, that we cannot do that, but it's so beautiful. That's why Baba would tell us about Ayaz. Ayaz was the perfect slave. Ayaz is the gem of obedience. When they put up an example of obedience, when the beloved says that this is how you should obey, he would quote Ayaz. Now, Piyaz in Indian language means an onion. And you know when you cut an onion, mm-hmm. you cry. So Baba would say, don't be like Piyaz. Be like Ayaz. We continue to be onions. I don't know. Be Ayaz.
Mani, when I came back from my first trip to India, we stopped in Portland to go back home. And a man on the street came up and said, I'm conducting a questionnaire. If you had your one wish in life, what would it be? And I thought, oh, what a gift. And I said, oh, well, I know I want to be with God when He comes back. And I thought, oh, I was given the gift that Baba asked for. So.
Where was that, Dave?
That was in Portland on Broadway.
And just a complete stranger comes
in? Yeah.
Baba. I'm glad you get the right Hello, Jerry, I'm here. Still sitting on the ocean, see? Waves. Shut up. I hope Eris has something to say about anybody else. I'm okay.
There's nothing to say.
But they all have so much to say, right? Yeah.
We are waiting for Casey.
Hello, Jerry, happy new year. Still sitting on the ocean, see? Waves. Explain where I was telling we have what is known as the this belief in what is known as the good eye. Actually, Baba has told us what the force of sound is. You know, sound is a force. It's a power which we are unaware of. And we use so carelessly. We give so little attention to it. Because we do not know the effect of it. We cannot see it. We just use it very rashly or negligently. But when I asked Baba once, Baba, what happens? Is it true? Is it true that this, in the old days we are told that if somebody sings, then that particular pitch, that vibration of his voice can bring the lights on, can bring the rain down. I mean, how could it? Sort of, I tell myself. And Baba looked at me, sort of, so what? I said, that's not a phenomenon. But why does it surprise you? Because sound is a force. And Baba said, that is nothing. When sound can do something that would seem incredible to you. And he told us about this Mazouk. The Mazouk who is on the seventh plane. Who is completely divorced from illusion. He is God-realized. He is, what is it?
Mazzub Kamil. Oh, yeah. God-realized.
Yeah, but what do you call it?
Mazzub
is absorbed. Overpowered. Yeah. So he's God. That Mazzub is the body of a man. And that body would not stay anymore unless it is retained by those around him. That's finished. He's finished with the body, with illusion. And therefore, the body will not unnecessarily continue. It would just drop. It would, you know, like a scab. But if there are those around him who love him, who retain that body as long as they can, who continue, maintain it. So Baba tells us about this Mazzub, and he was in Bombay, and there are these few around him who love him. You know, it's extraordinary when a God-conscious body draws, attracts, without one even knowing why. So always these beings have around them at least a few who are there to look after their physical needs because they are completely divorced from all that. The person gets that. So the Mazzub, Baba said, was as if he were unconscious or asleep. Now, the ones around him, the three or four who were looking after him, wanted to see to the needs of his body. And you can't, when a person is sleeping or unconscious, they want to feed him, they want to wash him, they want to take his toilet with me. So what they would do is they would call a fakir. A fakir is a Sufi mendicant. And who never asked for alms, but they, in my day, they used to be quite a few. And they sing. They have a very vibrant little voice. They sing. And if you feel like giving something, you stop them and you put something in their level. So this fakir would be called by these people to sing before this Mazzub who was to all eyes just asleep or unconscious, apparently asleep. So the fakir would be calling and the fakir would begin to sing. He would be asked to sing. And he would sing in a vibrant voice, you know. And as he went on singing, the Mazzub would apparently regain consciousness. He would sit up. And they were all ready. The mat was ready, the water was ready, whatever had to be done was quickly done. And then the fakir was told the time, so slowly he would lessen his tempo and his tone and then stop. And as he was doing that, the Mazzub would go back to sleep. So Baba said, but you have to sing from the heart. But then he said, see, you, where does sound go? He turned it out to us. Talks about sound. Where does sound go? None of us could